Welcome to Recruiting Daily's Use Case Podcast, a show dedicated to the storytelling that happens
or should happen
when practitioners purchase technology. Each episode is designed to inspire new ways and ideas to make your business better as we speak with the brightest minds in recruitment and HR tech. That's what we do. Here's your host, William Tincup.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is William Tincup, and you are listening to the Use Case Podcast. Today we have a Luke on from SmartPath, and please correct the pronunciation of your name. And we're going to be talking about the use case for SmartPath. So why don't you introduce both yourself and your pronunciation of your first name, because I think I butchered it, and also introduce SmartPath to us.
Sounds good, William. Yeah, but I don't know if you butchered it. I've had it butchered significantly worse than that. So I think I'd give you kind of a B minus.
Fair enough.
My name is Alok Deshpande. I'm the CEO of SmartPath. And at its core, SmartPath is a financial literacy and coaching business. We operate in the space of financial wellness, which has gotten to be fairly broad for employers. And what we specifically do is provide educational content. We do sessions throughout the year. We do one-on-one coaching with employees. And then lastly, we have a range of tools that can really help employees kind of understand what is the strategy? What's the direction I'm supposed to take? That's kind of the fundamental question that people struggle with is, what do I do next? And I think that that's really where we shine.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, so wellness, you know, most people, when they think of wellness, they think of obviously the health side, and then financial wellness. Thank God, you know, a couple of years ago, people started to really kind of dig into this, all the way from tuition reimbursement, all the way down into helping people with their credit, et cetera. Where did y'all start? What was your origin story in terms of kind of how you wanted to help corporations, but also help their employees, help the folks that work for them?
Yeah, it's interesting. The origin story actually does not start with corporations. My past was, I spent a decade in consulting. I was at a firm called Bain & Company, which is a management consulting firm.
Sure.
Through the Great Recession. And in 2009, 2010 timeframe, I effectively saw what was happening. Obviously, we saw a massive crash in the housing market. And if you recall, at that time, there was this kind of whole thing around Wall Street versus Main Street. And it was Wall Street versus Main Street. Wall Street has caused these problems. And look, I think the reality is that, yes, Wall Street definitely had some creations of products that made it easier to own a home for folks that maybe not necessarily should have owned a home at this stage in their financial journey.
Right.
But what I noticed, too, was that Main Street, which is the community I grew up in outside of Atlanta, there were a lot of friends of mine anecdotally that were just making bad choices. They were doing 100% stated loans, cashing out, buying a car on the refinance. And so they were kind of completely over leveraged. And as I started getting frustrated about the scenario, my wife said, well, why don't you do something about it? And I don't know if she thought that I was going to do what I did, which is I quit my job and started teaching people about money.
Right.
And I literally started with six people in a room. And then on the weekends, I would host these classes in downtown Atlanta that were free for anybody to come. And we'd have standing room only. And the teaching was basically the following, which was, let me teach and guide on how to make financial choices without selling any financial products. So today, SmartPath lives by that. We do education and coaching, and we don't have a dog in the fight. And I felt like that's what was missing for the middle class.
Yeah, because the CFPs or any broker, even the best brokers, they care. Either they care because they're making some type of fees, or it's in success. Somewhere along the line, they're making some type of money. But I wonder, because I've said this to people publicly before. It's like we weren't in high school. We weren't taught personal finance. Right. Like
correct.
We were taught, you know, trigonometry, which was, fantastic, I guess. But like, it would have been really nice to know how, like, credit, you know, how to establish credit, what, you know, the importance of credit, things like that. So when you walk into, you're talking to HR, you're talking to, you know, kind of getting set up and helping their employees. What are they, two things, what do they think their employees need? And the second part of that is, where do you tend to start? like in helping the employee population?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think typically what employers see is they see people taking money out of their 401k or their 403b. So that they see that as the kind of core pain point, or they might have like a hardship fund or a pass the hat type of fund.
Right.
And so they see that, and then they see anecdotal stories of folks wanting, there is a need for money. And there's typically an acute need for money. And so that's pretty much what employers see. I think in terms of our perspective, in terms of how do we go in and help? In our mind, you have to start with an underlying philosophy of what should a person be doing and in what order. And that's got to be very, very simple and consistent. The answer of it depends on things that folks are not necessarily skilled or confident about is kind of the worst answer you can give.
Right.
So what we do is we go in, I wrote a book on this in 2015, where we go in with a very structured philosophy. This is what you should do in order, starting with contributing up to the match in your retirement through emergency funds, paying off debt, so on and so forth. And that foundation allows an employee who may be making $17 an hour or $12 an hour or $40 an hour, it may allow a pipe fitter, a teacher, it allows them to have a plan and a path in front of them that doesn't require them to have to learn everything about money. Instead, they've got to execute. The analogy I draw is when I go on YouTube, I actually watch YouTube videos of fitness and then I'll do the workout, like basically workout videos.
Right.
When I'm doing that workout video, I'm not thinking about the physiology of the body and how is this, I'm just trying to get through it so I can be done. I'm trusting that that person knows what they're doing. And I think the same in money. Folks don't necessarily, I'm passionate about the topic, but I've come to learn that it's not everybody wants to be a personal finance guru. They just want to know what to do, and then they can go and help execute.
Right.
And I think that's the philosophy that we carry into organizations. And when organizations see what our system is, we teach a very structured system and everything spawns from that. The light bulb goes off that, yes, now our employees can speak the same language. It's not going to be an it depends sort of thing.
I love that. So let me ask you about the way you talk to and the way that you coach, obviously SmartPath coaches around debt consolidation, the way your philosophy on just kind of how to deal with debt, credit and savings.
Sure. I think so. Starting with debt, they all mix together. We right. start with something called financial fuel, which is the amount of money you spend less than you make each month. If that number is negative, there isn't really a lot to do on all the others until you right. can make that number positive.
Right.
And I don't know. I think what tends to happen in our space and specifically in financial health and wellness is there are some unbelievable products out there, but they mask the root problem. And the root problem is somebody could have a new form of credit that's cheaper than a payday loan. And those are great. That's actually a step in the right direction. But if we're not going to stop the bleeding, this is typically going to be a Band-Aid. So we look at those Band-Aids as very positive, some of those products. However, we can help stop the actual bleeding. So from our standpoint, it starts with fuel. Then from fuel, once you have fuel, there is a pathway to pay off debt and save money. And there are different tiers of the way you take that path. So for example, if I have student loans, again, if I have fuel, so I know that I can pay off these loans over some period of time, then it's going to be in my best interest to try to find a way to reduce the interest rate or reduce the time it's going to take to have this completed. That's the same with any type of debt. So once I'm in a space where I know I can pay it off because I have extra cash each month to throw at it, now I want to think about the efficiency in which I do that. Same with savings. Once I know that I have cash at the end of each month, now it's about how much do I save, where do I save, and does it make a difference whether I get a 1% APR or a 0.5% APR? What we try to do is to get people focused on the most important decisions and not worry too much about the ones that get most of the marketing. I'll give you an example. There's a lot of shift for people with their savings account. We get this question all the time. Should I move my $3,000 in savings to this other bank that's offering me 1.1% APR. And my current bank is only offering me 0.1%. Well, when you do the math on that, that's like a $30 decision. And so how, while it seems like kind of the general rule of thumb is I should be going for more interest than less, that is true. However, that decision is probably number 18 on the list that you should be thinking about.
Right.
How do we prioritize those decisions accordingly? Because that decision is not going to matter whether you get 0.1 or 1%. What's going to matter is, can I drive more fuel to increase that 3,000 to 4,000 because I'm saving more? And I think this puts the power back into the individual's hands to say, okay, what can I do? What do I control to improve my situation? And then the rest of the stuff will kind of work itself out. And that's typically how we think through it. I mean, we can get, I'm happy to get into details on, like, we call them care plans. How do you think through paying off debt? How do you think through savings and what accounts you should use? We get very specific.
Right, of course.
But ultimately, you got to have fuel first. You got to have fuel. And then ultimately, you look at this employee and you kind of think within the context of their life. Take, for example, an employee that has three young children, been married 5-6 years, and is kind of just like in the middle, in the thick of things. I'm not going to ask that employee to go and start moving their savings accounts around and all this kind of stuff. I'm trying to get them zoomed in on fuel, understand where does that next dollar go, and just execute on that month after month after month. And when they look up 5 years from now, or shoot, 5 months from now, they are going to see that progress. And the reason that I'm trying to simplify it for them is because three young kids is hard enough. Me adding additional complexity because it sounds smart isn't going to be helpful. They will nod their head and not actually do it. The easier I can make it, the better chance I have for them to execute against the guidance.
Which is ultimately the goal.
Absolutely.
Is there a way for employees, because some of this is they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't taught necessarily in high school. Not everyone has an MBA or, you know, took finance, et cetera. And so there's a lot of anecdotal information flowing around. My grandfather's, you know, brother-in-law who met some guy at, you know, AutoZone told me that. How do they know where they are in terms of like their health, the financial health of where they are and as it relates to where they want to be?
You know, most don't actually know that. What they do know is when they are facing a pain point.
Right.
That pain point could be this credit card debt feels like it's drowning me.
Right.
These student loans, I never think I'm going to pay them off. A pain point could even be positive. How do I get enough money for a down payment on a home?
Right.
Am I in the right investments or am I in the right place when I'm contributing to this retirement account? What is a retirement account? And so I think that what we find is that this macro view of their health relative to where they should be and measuring that with some score is more a function of what organizations want to do to prove their worth. And I would say vendors in this case, than it is how the actual employee behaves.
Right.
If you help them with their next issue, you will earn the right to help them with the one after that and the one after that. And that's kind of where we keep our focus on is get them help on what they have going on right now. Make sure that it's the right thing to help them on. Like if you want to buy a home, but you've got $22,000 of credit card debt and you make 45 grand, well, maybe we need to think differently about home ownership. Because this does not seem like the right next move. So we'll be very transparent about that. But I don't need to teach this individual or coach this individual on a broad view of their financial health. I need to coach them on what they feel is their pain point today. And we have very structured ways to do that along every single personal finance topic you can imagine.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about, because I see this as an engagement, you know, yep, tool, an employee engagement, and also an employee retention tool, you know, because you're just like in some of the great, you know, health wellness programs, you're trying to help them get to a really, really good place. I also see it as a recruiting tool. So on one level, I see it, you know, I mean, I know we're dealing with employees, but, you know, if you, when you're applying for a job, if a recruiter can tell you, hey, this is some of the things you can look forward to post, you know, agreement and, you know, post onboarding, you know, I can see that. I can see that as a, you know, a benefit to be sold or to be marketed to candidates. But without stepping there, what do you, when you talk to HR, you know, how do you talk to them? What do they like about SmartPath? You know, what do you know, what barriers do you face, et cetera?
Yeah. It's like I tend to piece those apart. I think that we tell employers directly, financial wellness alone will not make your culture. If you already have a culture and a set of benefits that speak to total rewards, so if you have even that function in your organization, you've already taken a massive step towards this being a very employee-centric organization. If you're not an employee-centric organization, dropping in a mental health program or a financial health program with none of the other stuff is going to feel a bit disingenuous. And so typically when this is used in recruiting, SmartPath will be one of many things that they're talking about.
Right.
In terms of the total package that you get when you come here. So I make it very clear to employers, and really it's not about me making it clear or them making it clear. We tend to engage with employers who've already thought about total rewards before we ever got there. So those are the ones that there's a good fit.
So let me make sure I understand. So like Fortune's list of the best companies to work for, great places to work, or best places to work, local awards, et cetera. Those people kind of already get it.
Yeah. Those people kind of already get it. And then in industries where high competition, so we're seeing a lot more activity from industries where there's high competition for developer talent.
Right.
Those companies may not get it yet, but they're recognizing that they better get it quickly.
So, or they're either going to lose the talent or not even have the talent apply. Either
you
both
got
are
it.
Horrible outcomes.
And in those situations, they're not just looking at us. They're looking at mental health, wellness. Yep. They're looking at what do we do for food in terms of can we do some sort of, what are we doing for PTO? They're thinking through their entire benefit strategy. What are we going to do? One that's most interesting to me now is the advent of lower and moderate compensated employees getting equity.
Right.
And what does that look like? So they're thinking holistically about this all the way starting at the CEO level. So either they have it or they have a strong enough pain point in the industry to where they need to get it.
So with that, I just want to make sure you're obviously talking or at least the easiest path for SmartPath would be to talk with people that get it. When you find yourself talking with folks that maybe they haven't felt this pain yet, or maybe they haven't invested in wellness in general as other companies or other industries, where do you start with those folks? Or even do you? Do you waste time pushing the boulder uphill?
No, not that much. We don't waste that much time doing that because we don't think it's a great use of their time. It's not so much about our time, but you know, I'll give you an example. If a company doesn't have a 401k match, then I tell them, like,
that's
happy
an indicator.
To have a conversation with you. But it's all gonna come back to, even if you could do it at the safe harbor 3%, you know. Do that first. Find the money for that. That's the best help you can get, and put them on auto enrollment and auto escalation. I can't do anything to eclipse the value of you doing that.
Right.
And so those are the kinds of conversations we have for the employers who are at the earlier stage. And I'll even have conversations with employers at an earlier stage to say, do you really even need to do this? Because in some industries, they are in a situation where margins are razor thin.
Right.
And this isn't something that's going to help your margins immediately, and definitely not from a CFO standpoint.
Right. If they have a high turnover, I mean, in that same scenario, but they're burning through employees for one reason or another, then this could be seen as a retention tool.
It could be, although if they're burning through employees, typically, I would not start with this. I'd start with how are the managers being trained?
Good point.
You know, I'm going to try to guide the employer what's best for the employer.
Right.
We come in there at some point, depending on where they are, but there are plenty of conversations I've had and our team has had where the answer is not us.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think that's actually the best way to talk with customers. I think probably your experience in Bain also kind of gave you some of this is, you know, if you've got the fundamentals down, we can lay some things on top of the fundamentals that will be helpful. But if you don't have the fundamentals, 401k matching being a great example of that. If you don't have the fundamentals, we probably need to get the fundamentals down first. And when by we, I mean the French Victorian, you probably need to get the fundamentals done. So let's just kind of pivot and talk a little bit about, you know, and I don't need to know the dollars and cents part, but your financial model, like how you, when you position things to HR, you know, where or how do you make money? Is it a subscription, SaaS, software?
Yeah, typically. So our model kind of consists of two components. We have a subscription software company. First of all, our model is employer sponsored.
Right.
The employer pays us.
Right.
We don't generate income any other way. They pay us a fixed fee for the platform, which includes classes every single week, which includes some custom classes for their employees, which includes our tools. So all of that is available on it's a SaaS fee.
Right.
And then we charge for coaching. And we charge for coaching on an hourly rate. And we know what our margins are on that. And so that hourly rate ranges based on the size of the employer. And they can, the challenge with doing a usage-based, which is usage-based in that regard, is that employers want kind of, hey, you know, I like this because I'm only paying for the people using it, but what happens if lots of people use it? You know, how do I budget for this? And so typically we're really good at kind of being a good predictor of, depending on their communication strategy, their marketing, how many people are even going to know about this and how it's going to play out. We can give them a good number to say, hey, we think about 500 of your employees are going to use the coaching. And we, in year one, we will take the hit on overage.
Right.
I'm not going to ever turn somebody away. If somebody needs financial coaching, they're not going to get turned away by us. It's just kind of at the core of our mission. It's why I started the business. That being said, at the end of year one, we can have a stewardship meeting and say, hey, you know, you guys had like 3x the usage. Now, from a pure business standpoint, I was like, wow, this was highly unprofitable. That being said, that is always a good thing.
Right.
So companies turn around and say, okay, I can go find more budget if we're seeing high usage and high satisfaction. And so that first year helps us set a baseline and then we go from there.
I love that. So one of the things that, you know, as you talk about usage and consumption, how do you, outside of those two things, which were great indicators, how do you view success with an account?
Yeah, we do a few other things. It's really important from our perspective to segment what the value of this program is based on your employee base and what types. I'll give some examples. Let's take a company X that has a large portion of the population of their employees that are nearing retirement age, over the age of 50. For those types of companies, one of the challenges they're going to face is they're going to eventually have to do either voluntary RIFs or RIFs because you may not be able to absorb this many individuals as they get to later stages in their career. And let's assume if that's the case, how can we help specifically in our retirement readiness coaching package, help people put the puzzle together that shows them if they're truly able to retire? And what we found is unbelievable, man. We found that 60% of the people that we end up doing retirement readiness with are able to retire 4.5 years earlier than they thought they were. Now think about how big of the gap that is. If somebody thinks that they can't retire, they are going to hang on as long as possible.
Right.
Because a lot of times the reason they think they can't retire is because putting together Social Security, medical costs, the fact that their mortgage might be paid off or not, what are their expenses going to be in retirement? How long are they going to live? That is highly complicated in any kind of average person's mind who doesn't kind of live and breathe this stuff. So in those situations, the default response for somebody who doesn't know is to keep working. I don't want to turn off the nozzle of a paycheck
right,
if I don't think I can retire. And what we're finding is a majority of them, 60%, that's not the case. They actually can retire way sooner than they thought once they see how the puzzle is put together. So there's a very direct ROI there. because there's a carrying cost of employees at a certain stage, especially right. depending on the industry. There's a whole other set of employees where presenteeism or absenteeism is a problem in the workplace. Folks are there, but they're not there. And all of us, you and I on this call and everybody listening is remembers a time at work where your mind was somewhere else. We actually do a lot of surveying, pre and post classes, coaching, kind of all these components to get a feel for the reduction in the number of hours people are distracted so that we can quantify the benefit. Now, that's not going to show up directly on a CFO's P&L. If they push me for where is that number? Productivity rarely shows up as a direct number. It's going to show up as efficiency. And so, but we will be able to at least share from a quantitative standpoint, what does that look like in your organization? And that's the same, it's SmartPath that's being used, but it's segmenting the population to know what am I trying to do with these groups to drive true ROI to the organization.
I love this. I'm so glad we got to talk because I get asked about financial wellness pretty much weekly. So it's just really nice to know, A, that you're doing the work that you're doing and you're helping people. I mean, this is, I know it's not a not for profit. I fully understand that. However, it is mission led and you are helping people. So brother, I really appreciate you carving out time for us today and giving us the use case for SmartPath.
No problem at all, man. Thanks for having me on and congrats on all your success.
Absolutely. And vice versa. And thanks for everyone for listening to the Use Case Podcast. Until next time.
You've been listening to Recruiting Daily's Use Case Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite platform and hit us up at recruitingdaily.com.